Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and host of the 312 Show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. You got any questions, you want to drop us a voicemail, maybe your reaction to the stalemate of the Bulls free agency so far, what you think about Zach LaVine, maybe David Nwaba, anything you want us to discuss, you want to give us your thoughts on that, text us in or leave us a voicemail at 331-979-1369. Matt, happy Friday to you. How you doing? How is life on the lake?
Oh, what's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Life on the lake is idyllic, utopian, divine. I have done nothing other than swim and tool around on various aquatic vessels and play with my baby niece. So lake life is treating me pretty well this week.
Matt, I hate to do this, but right off the top of the show, I got to run back a sound bit from one of our episodes last week. And that's going to get into our first topic of the day. Let me play that for you real quick. Any possibility the Bulls think about bringing in Butler and Kyrie Irving next season, like as a tandem? Because I know there's been rumors about them two for a long time wanting to play together and them two being free agents next year. And obviously it's a big question with Kyrie and being gone from the Boston Celtics. But any chance that they throw out the idea of maybe bringing Butler back and pairing him alongside Kyrie Irving?
Wow, it's a little early in the day for smoking crack, Jordan. No, I don't think so. No.
You're smoking crack. Stop.
I had to ask. Did you have to ask?
All right, fine. Well, yeah, no, there's my answer. No, I think Jimmy and the Bulls are done. Yeah, sorry I had to go the Stephen A. Smith route and, you know, accuse you of smoking crack. But I still think this idea is ridiculous. I know you're about to tell me, well, we keep hearing more and more of this Jimmy Butler Kyrie rumor stuff going on. So let me have it. Do you honestly think this is a realistic possibility?
Look, I think it's funny that this has been a conversation now spanning over a week's time. Like every radio station here in Chicago, for our listeners that aren't local here, literally every conversation that's been about the Bulls this week has been about the opportunity of Kyrie and Jimmy Butler maybe coming back to Chicago and wanting to play here together. Do I think that possibility is honestly realistic? Probably not, but the idea that the Bulls are going to could potentially have two max contracts available next season. And I run through the list, Matt, and the last couple days I've been running through the list of 2019 and 2020 free agents. And a lot of those guys, man, I've found every situation where I've said, nope, he's not coming to a new team. Nope, he's going to stay where he's at. Nope, he's going to probably go to this team instead of Chicago. And I'm narrowing down the lists, and I'm like, man, all these top free agents that the Bulls are freeing up money for, a lot of these guys are probably going to stay with the same teams or go to one of the three teams that they've been rumored to be, and none of those have been the Bulls. So to me, as the Bulls next year and in 2020, to set up pitches for all of these top guys, Klay Thompson being one of the guys that we talked about earlier on this week. Like, to me, I think it's a waste of the Bulls' time, because really, I am having a hard time believing that any of the top free agents are going to come to Chicago in 2019 or 2020 just basically off a pitch, just basically off a front office pitch. That's why it drags me back to looking at maybe Kyrie and Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, I mean, I believe the notion that Jimmy and Kyrie want to play together at some point because they're good buddies, and Jimmy has gone on record in interviews and television appearances and whatever. The question of, you know, if you could play with any person in the league, who would you play with? His answer has always been Kyrie. So that part is realistic to me. The part that doesn't make sense that people here in Chicago are talking about is the Bulls being the team to make that happen. I don't see that from Jimmy's perspective. I don't see that from the Bulls' perspective. I think there is maybe some truth to the fact that Jimmy, whether or not you believe Cowley's digging up old dirt story about how he doesn't like Karl Anthony Towns and thinks that he's not enough of a workhorse like Jimmy is, and that's why he doesn't want to stay in Minnesota because that relationship is bad. I don't know if I entirely believe that for it to be as serious as Cowley makes it sound with his recent stuff. But what I do believe is that Jimmy ain't no dummy and can look at the Western Conference right now, which still has the Warriors and still has the Rockets and now has LeBron, and say, I got to get the hell out of here and go back to the Eastern Conference somewhere. So Jimmy not signing a multi-year extension to stay with Minnesota, also to me, realistic. But if he wants to team up with Kyrie somewhere in the East, I'm not buying the Bulls being the team where that happens.
I think the other place, too, just as far as an early look at teams that might have money available, and you're talking about Eastern Conferences as well, the Brooklyn Nets, dude. I would not sleep on the Brooklyn Nets. They're going to have two slots for max contracts next year. Brooklyn's a very up-and-coming place, too, just as far as a place to live and the money that you can make as far as marketing.
Oh, yeah, it's basically the new Manhattan.
Exactly. So I look at that, and like, they play at the Barclays Center, too, an amazing venue. So that isn't out of the realm of possibility. They've got a lot of young, nice pieces, too, there. And, I mean, look, pairing yourself alongside a young D'Angelo Russell, if he has a really good year this year, yeah, that could be a possibility as well. The thing that I get stuck on is, who would rather not have Jimmy here? Would Jimmy rather not come back to Chicago? Do you think the relationship is way too fractured for that to happen? Or is it, hey, you know what? Jimmy still likes a lot of people here in Chicago and likes a lot of people that are in that Chicago Bulls organization. He might not be fond of Gar Forman, but it still seems like him and John Paxson always had mutual respect for each other, and doesn't seem like that relationship was tarnished at all. But obviously there was clear dysfunction and clear dislike for Gar Forman. Look, if Jimmy ultimately looks around the league and says, you know what, if Chicago's the best opportunity for us to be competitive again, and I want to play with my buddy Kyrie Irving, and that's really the only spot that they can find themselves in, a top three, top four market, like, that could be a possibility. But I think it's going to be more from the front office's side, where they're going to be like, yeah, I don't think we don't want to go back down that road again. Because look, just a year ago, Jimmy Butler wasn't considered a guy that they could build around. And so you're talking about bringing Kyrie in and building around Kyrie Irving, and maybe Markkanen being your three and Jimmy Butler being your number two as far as an impactful team. And I don't know if that even still gets you to an NBA Finals. Do you?
I mean, maybe in a weaker East. It might, but that would essentially be the Bulls just making a complete 180 on a decision they made a little over a year ago now that said, we don't believe that Jimmy can be the guy on a championship contending team, and he doesn't fit the stylistically, he doesn't fit how our new coach that we want to invest our future in wants to run his offense. Hoiberg and Butler clashed because Butler turned himself into an ISO offensive player and didn't want to run Fred's offense. So do you want to bring that problem back into the fold? Do you want to get rid of Fred Hoiberg? If the Bulls have a season where they don't see enough player development, do they use Fred as the scapegoat? Do they move on from Fred and pick a new direction as far as the head coaching seat on the sidelines? Maybe somebody who fits more towards something that would be a Butler and Kyrie backcourt? Seems like kind of a crazy hypothetical to me, considering the decisions the Bulls have made to get to where they are now.
And look, there's still a lot of love here from fans for Jimmy Butler, but I think there's also a lot of fans out there that were kind of sick and tired of him. Like, they didn't like the way he changed over the last 2 years he was with the Bulls. Like I've said multiple times, I thought Dwayne Wade was probably one of the worst things for Butler coming into a possible contract year and then him getting shipped out. Look, I think it didn't help Butler's case with Bulls fans, I should say, if in that way. To me, I still have a hard time believing that with Butler and with Kyrie Irving and with Lauri Markkanen, and maybe you keep Zach LaVine around and Chris Dunn and Wendell Carter Jr., like, to me, that's still in this Eastern Conference. Sure, you're at a 3 or a 4 seed. But I have some questions about Kyrie Irving's injury history. I love the guy's game, but you have to put that into account if you're talking about giving a guy a max contract. Think about all the minutes, too, on Jimmy's legs so far. He's a Tom Thibodeau-built player. He's got a ton of miles, ton of minutes on those legs already.
And that's what I was saying when you first brought this up earlier this week, is that that's a big reason they decided to finally pull the trigger and make the trade, because they didn't want to pay Jimmy that DPE contract for a guy who was going to be playing the back end of that contract as he exited his prime in his 30s. And to your point about the miles on the legs and Tom Thibodeau wearing him down, who knows how many really good years Jimmy has left.
I just have a hard time coming to terms with, in 2019 or 2020, and maybe this season is going to be a huge benchmark for what the Bulls can pitch free agents, but I have a hard time going through the list of guys and figuring out why they would want to come to Chicago. You know, I can figure out more reasons why they would go to other teams. I think about Klay Thompson. I think about other star players who are probably going to try and pair up with other stars already on teams. And that's where you fall back to the option of, well, yeah, you got Lauri Markkanen and he could be really good for the next 10 years and could be a potential all-star. But how many of those guys that are getting ready to be paid max contracts are ready to just wait around for 2 or 3 more years until that happens? So to me, I find myself running through the 2019 and 2020 list of free agents, and more times than not, I'm like, yeah, he's probably not coming to Chicago. So what's ultimately the Bulls' pitch to any of these free agents? Because I'm not finding it right now, and maybe we have to wait till the 2018-2019 starts in order to find a way to pitch these guys. But I'm even though the cap space is there, I'm finding it awful hard to figure out what guys you could entertain that would even want to come to Chicago.
Yeah, that's going to be the big question mark, because we're kind of just in this holding pattern right now in the summer of 2018 as far as free agency goes, because if you've been paying attention, you know that that's kind of how the plan unfolds for now, that they're going to sit, wait, be patient, and try to strike next summer. And the summer following that, the question that we are all dying to know the answer to, that we have to wait around for, is will they finally be able to land the guy that they're going after in free agency, a big name star, to get them to come to a large market team with a rich history and an insatiable fan base? There are plenty of selling points, but the big one of can these free agents look at the core that Chicago has right now and say they took a big step in the 18-19 season. I think this is a winning team. I can come to this team and make it an even more so winning team. That's the unknowable question until we see more of this core next season. And hopefully they finally get it done as far as landing their biggest free agent target.
Give me a percentage of what you think a Kyrie, Jimmy Butler possibility for next season is.
Those two playing together somewhere, or those two playing together in Chicago?
Those two playing in Chicago together.
How about 2.5%?
I'm going to give it about 20%. Just because
20%?
20%, because if the Bulls have the money.
You're nuts.
Butler, out of any one of those free agents, has the connection to Chicago, and despite everything that happened the first year, the last year that he was here, he still has mad love for the city and a lot of love for a lot of people in that organization still. And look, him and Gar Foreman don't need to get along for him to want to come back here and for him to figure it out and play. I think you brought up the biggest point, though, a couple minutes ago when you talked about Fred Hoiberg. I think that would be the biggest speed bump as far as wanting to come back, and what would it cost as far as Jimmy being the guy or Jimmy not being the guy, Kyrie being the guy or him not. You're right. I don't think Jimmy Butler fits in Fred's system that well.
If you bring Jimmy back, you got to get rid of Fred.
True.
There's no ifs or ands or buts about that. You have, if you actually want to bring Jimmy back, you got to get rid of Fred. They cannot coexist.
So Matt's giving it 2.5%, and I'll give it 20% for next season. It'll be interesting. We'll find out, maybe more so when the season starts here, what that relationship between him and Karl Anthony Towns is really like. And I don't know, maybe Tom Thibodeau will have a tough decision here to maybe have to deal Butler unless he wants him to walk for nothing. So we got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls, but when we come back, I'm going to talk about the Bulls Summer League. Their roster has been put up and put out there for the last couple of days. Just going to want to run through their roster real quick, what we expect from the guys in Summer League, and some of the guys that have joined their team so far. So stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media, on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. And on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls. Stay up to date with everything Chicago Bulls at LockedOnBulls.com. And subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts.
All right, back here on Locked On Bulls, Matt, Summer League has been underway now for a couple days now, and we've gotten to see a few different top prospects, one in being Trae Young, the other being Marvin Bagley, a few other guys too that have popped off a little bit, but I was just telling you off air, man, Trae Young, 38 of his first 48 shots in Summer League were misses. He shot 7% yesterday.
Yeah.
In his game.
That's disgusting. And I am just still breathing a huge sigh of relief that he is not who the Bulls went with their first of two first-round draft picks. The most notable thing that he's done, and I think this happened in their game yesterday, was getting to a bit of a scrap with Grayson Allen. Grayson Allen already starting fights. He's been in the NBA for all of, what, a week and a half? Already starting fights. I love it. I love it.
If you watch the video on that, that was triggered more by Trae Young than I think it was Grayson Allen. And I think it's going to be interesting this year with Grayson Allen. I think he's going to find himself in a lot of those situations just because of the narrative that's followed him so far and sort of his reputation from college. You're going to see a lot of NBA players try to get after him, get under his skin, or maybe start a scuffle with him. So that's going to be something he's going to have to battle in his rookie year. Okay, let's run through some of the Bulls players that are going to be on the Summer League roster. The Bulls kick off on Saturday night. They kick off at 8:30 Central Time here on ESPN2. I believe their first game is against the Cleveland Cavaliers, so we'll be able to see Colin Sexton. Just going to run through some of these guys, though, Matt. Matt, you stop me if you find any of these names that are intriguing, and I'll kind of run through some of their just highlights as guys that are going to be a part of this roster. So the first and most notable, and I think that are going to get a lot of attention here in Chicago just because of the Loyola team, and that's Dante Ingram. 6'6" guard. He shot 11 points per game on 44% shooting in his senior year. Obviously, he's from Simeon as well, so we heard early on when the Bulls were giving him a workout that they were kind of intrigued. Obviously, we're going to take a draft pick on him, but I think he's going to be, out of anybody on this roster that wasn't formally with the Bulls, probably going to get the most attention so far.
Well, yeah, because he was not only a member of that Loyola Ramblers team that this Chicago City embraced during their awesome Cinderella run through the Final Four, but he was a guy who hit a big shot for them. It was in their first game, right? He was the one who hit the buzzer beater for the win. So obviously that's a big name that I don't really know much about whether or not I see him having a future in the NBA and if he has that kind of skill. But it'll definitely be interesting to see what he can do in the Summer League. And if he looks good in Summer League, you never know. Blakeney is a great example. Somebody who's going to be participating in Summer League again this year. Who, you know, Summer League and G League aren't the same thing, but absolutely owned the G League and is trying to prove that he could do that at the NBA level. So who knows? Maybe all Ingram needs is a little bit of making a splash here in Summer League, and even if it's not the Bulls, some team might take a chance on
it. So then you bring me to the next guy, and I think this could be the most interesting guy outside of Chandler Hutchinson and Wendell Carter to pay attention to, and that's Antonio Blakeney. 32 points in the G League as the G League Rookie of the Year, 6.7 rebounds, 3.9 assists in 32 games for the Windy City Bulls. To me, I feel like if he pops off again in summer league, the Bulls have to entertain the idea of signing him to a guaranteed contract. Like, what he did in the G League last year and then popping off in summer league even before that to give him a two-way contract, I feel like if the Bulls are going to deal any of the guys that they have on the roster, they're going to need shooting ability. So bringing in Blakeney on a small contract or a very cheap contract might be ideal for them. But he, for me, out of anybody on this roster outside of Hutchison and Wendell Carter Jr., are going to be definitely the guy I'm going to be watching.
Yeah, I still think the Bulls, I would be surprised to see them sign Blakeney to a full contract because they still have another year of his two-way contract. That was a two-year that he signed. And I still really think the Bulls are trying to keep a roster spot open for the use of potential trades this summer or coming up to next season's deadline. I think that might prevent them from offering Blakeney a legit contract. I mean, we'll see if they actually keep him around as a two-way player again in 18-19 and are still really impressed and believe in his future. Maybe they sign him to something that's a guaranteed full-level contract, but it's got to be something that doesn't break the bank or even really significantly put a dent in the bank, because if you're talking about offering him a full guaranteed contract a year from now, that priority is going to be signing huge, big-name guys who will be very expensive.
I agree with you. And just a couple other guys here on the Bulls Summer League team just to maybe keep an eye on. One being Kaiser Gates from Xavier. He averaged 7.2 points and 4.6 rebounds for Xavier last season. He also shot 38% on 143 three-point attempts last season. So potential three-point option there. I don't see anything too big with that. Another guy that actually surprised me on the Bulls roster and surprised that he hung around in the G League last year, and I think he came out of college a little bit too early.
Mello?
That would be Mello Trimble. And
Trimble!
Man, Mello Trimble for Maryland when he played in the Big Ten, when Maryland was really good. I mean, this guy was lights out. He could shoot. He could pass. He didn't come out in his sophomore year. He came out in his junior year, which a lot of his stats had fallen. And a lot of people said he could have been a first-round pick if he had come out in his sophomore year. He averaged 16.2 points and 5.3 assists in the G League last year for the Iowa Wolves. He'll be another guy to keep an eye on, I think, as a point guard, and still with the Bulls not really knowing what their rotation is, or at least not having a long-term option. I think he's a guy to keep an eye on, too, alongside Ryan Arcidiacono. So we'll see. But Mello Trimble, I think, just for if you're a college basketball fan out there or a Big Ten college basketball fan, seeing Mello Trimble's name on there is kind of fun and exciting. So that'll be another guy that I'll be interested to watch. Now, to me, none of these guys, I think, more than likely, none of these guys outside of Carter and Chandler Hutchison are going to be on this roster next year. Arcidiacono will probably be there, too. He's still on a two-way deal. But if there was somebody to most likely come out of this summer league team and either get a two-way contract or be invited to training camp, I think we're looking at Antonio Blakeney and maybe an outside shot for either a guy like Dante Ingram or a guy like I said, Mello Trimble or Kaiser Gates.
Yeah, I mean, I think if they impress, some of those guys you just mentioned might get an invitation to come play for the Windy City Bulls. But outside of that, no. I think it would be very surprising if anybody outside of Blakeney on this roster, aside from, as you mentioned, the two new rookies, plays any real minutes for the Bulls at all this season. And obviously the most important factor for Bulls fans as we get into summer league is seeing what exactly we have in Wendell Carter Jr. and Chandler Hutchison. There's probably a significant portion of Bulls fans who maybe only saw Carter Jr. play a game or two for Duke during the tourney and really haven't seen Chandler Hutchison play at all. And if you're not a diehard hoops nerd and haven't like actually gone and found their highlight packages and old game tapes of theirs on YouTube, this is your first chance to see what they look like. Of course, it's a level of competition not quite at the NBA level when guys are playing in summer league, but hey, we do know that some people take summer league very seriously. most notably Denzel Valentine.
Hey, if you never won a summer league championship, you don't know what it feels like. Just real quick,
exactly.
A note on Chandler Hutchison, just because I saw this tweet come across my timeline yesterday. Figured it was worth mentioning. It says, hearing Bulls number 22 pick Chandler Hutchison is looking fantastic in scrimmages preparing for the summer league games. Bulls are fired up about his ability to attack the basket, run the floor, and play pressure defense. So I'm interested. I think outside of Carter, I think I'm actually more interested in seeing what Hutchison can do, especially spreading the floor. Obviously, I touched on this too in off air. I was telling you about Marvin Bagley and Trae Young and some of these other guys who've started summer league already. I'm interested to see how Wendell Carter's game and what kind of pressure is going to be applied for him to showcase a little bit more of his offensive talent this summer. Obviously, too, I think another thing I want to tell Bulls fans, too, is don't be quick to react if one of these guys doesn't play well in the first couple of games. That is the biggest thing that I think I can warn Bulls fans, is don't have an overreaction if Carter has a bad game or if Hutchison has a bad game or Blakeney or anything. If these guys are still trying to feel themselves out and they're playing up against competition that's lower than the NBA right now, but I don't think it's anything to worry about. I look at Trae Young and the overreaction to Trae Young, too. I even said that about him. I'm like, there's going to be a ton of immediate overreaction about his game just in summer league alone. And look, it's the first couple of games these guys are playing as professionals. So take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah. I mean, I think Bulls fans have a tendency to jump to conclusions sometimes, freak out, and put way too much stock into things that are trivial in the grand scheme. So, yes, I'm excited to watch Summer League, and I'm very excited in particular to watch Hutchison and Carter Jr., but it won't be, as you said, a huge tell of what to expect from their rookie seasons if for whatever reason it's not a immediately, wow, these guys are both really, really good. They're dominating Summer League. If that doesn't happen, it's not a big
deal. We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls when we come back. Going to talk a little bit about David Nwaba, a little bit about Zach LaVine just to finish up the show, what we might think a sign and trade would look like for David Nwaba, and also if the Kings are really, truly serious about Zach LaVine and signing him to an offer sheet. All of that and more. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds. All right, Matt, with our final segment of the show going into the weekend, which one you want to start with? You want to start with David Nwaba? You want to start with Zach LaVine?
Let's start with LaVine just to get it over with.
All right. So Zach LaVine, rumor has it, obviously Adrian Wojnarowski on his pod, on the Woj pod, was talking about the likelihood that the Kings actually will sign Zach LaVine to an offer sheet. Now, whether or not that's true, it seems like the Kings have more interest than I think we all initially thought, just because we were talking about cap space and them having a little bit of interest before the draft, saying, yeah, maybe the Kings will be a team. But looking at them and having the money to spend still, and they haven't spent it on anybody, and whether or not they want to bring Vince Carter back, they could end up opening from $17 million per year. If they take that cap hold off, they could have as much as $26 million in cap space for this upcoming season going. So to me, I don't know if how serious the Kings are, but if they are, what are the odds that if it's north of $20 million, and what are the odds that the Bulls match that?
I'm going to repeat what I've said on this show before as we're waiting to see what happens with LaVine. I don't think the Kings or any other team is going to offer him upwards of $20 million per on a multi-year deal. I just don't see that happening. So the hypothetical of if that happens, will the Bulls match, and should the Bulls match, I'm not letting myself worry about that right now. I'll cross that bridge if and when we come to it, but I really don't think he's going to get that offer from the Kings or from anyone else. What I've heard most recently is the Kings are kind of scared about the injury history with LaVine and Jabari Parker, and that's going to be the prevailing thought as to why they don't sign either of them to a big offer sheet. If, let's say they do, the Kings or some other team out there that can make the cap space to offer LaVine a multi-year deal upwards of $20 million per, if I'm the Bulls, I think I let him walk. I don't know if he is worth that risk and worth that money right now. Now, that's me saying if I'm in the Bulls front office shoes, if I'm making that call, I think if it's significantly upwards of $20 million per for 4 years, I let him go. I think the Bulls, the guys that are actually in that front office and running that front office, I think they would match it.
To me, I think this is the thing that we need to talk about too. If the Bulls' decision should not be based off of trading for LaVine in the Butler deal. And I think that's what Bulls fans are still going back to and using as a reason why the Bulls should sign LaVine. And I've been a staunch LaVine supporter. I think LaVine can still be a really good player in this league. Now, for $20+ million a year on a multi-year deal, that's where I got some questions. But even going north of $15 million per year, say $16 to $19 million, I'm still along for the ride. I still have a ton more questions about the Bulls being able to land a top free agent than I do about LaVine turning out to be a good player, if that makes any sense at all. Which one is less of a risk and which one's more of a sure bet? To me, the history tells me that the Bulls are going to swing and miss in free agency in 2019 and 2020. With LaVine, 25 games is a tiny sample size. And I look back at what he did with the Wolves and sure, first couple of years, but I look at his age factor too. LaVine and the Butler deal, I think, are completely separate now. For me, at least, that's the way I'm looking at this. I don't attach him to that Butler deal anymore. I look at it straight up as what do the Bulls want to do here as far as their opportunity and going forward? Do they really feel like that they can draw top free agents next summer and 2 summers from now and afford to let LaVine walk? Because what happens if you let LaVine walk and then you go into 2019 and a lot of the free agents look around and say, yeah, you guys got Lauri Markkanen, but that's about it. So I'm going to go play somewhere else. And to me, the first thing that I said about LaVine when he came here in Chicago is he's going to be a guy that's going to be able to draw big time free agents and convince other free agents around the league to come and play here in Chicago. You let that guy walk and then I don't know. I honestly don't know. If I had to place my bets, though, on either side of whether let LaVine walk and push all my chips into the table in 2019-2020, or sign LaVine to a multi-year deal around $18 to $20 million and trust that your team, your coaching staff, can build LaVine up to be the player that we all thought he was going to be when we got him in that trade. So I think that's the decision that Bulls fans really need to make and use the Butler and take the Butler deal completely out of it, because that has no bearing on it anymore. That literally has no bearing.
I can sense the amount of hate and anger that a large portion of Bulls fans are pointed right at you, Jordan, for saying that. And I don't think you're wrong. I think you're right. I think when it comes to the Bulls and making this decision about Zach LaVine, and if they are put in the uncomfortable position of deciding whether or not to match a big offer that he may get, you have to separate Zach LaVine and the Bulls' current roster and their current situation and what they want as the best move for the office moving forward. You have to separate it from the Butler deal and the fact that LaVine came in the Butler deal. I think a lot of Bulls fans will say you're crazy to suggest that. How can you take a guy who you think was probably the biggest at the time, most attractive piece of that trade, when you're trading away your star player, one of the top 20 players in the league, and then turn around and let him walk as a restricted free agent after only having him for 25 games? You're nuts. You're out of your mind. I see where you're coming from. And it's not to say that it's illogical to feel that way. But whether it's basketball and these kinds of decisions or anything in life, you can't necessarily let the past situations and past life decisions dictate and control what you do in the present and the future. It's just not a smart move. So I think that, to me, if the Bulls are forced to make some decision where some team actually hands LaVine an offer sheet that he signs, whether it's like 4 years and $22-23 million per, they cannot think about this decision as a, that's kind of an overpay, but we did get him in the Butler deal, and he was kind of part of the plan that we've got here. So, no. Forget about the Butler deal. Make the decision that you feel is best for the present and future of your organization.
And I throw that back to Bulls fans. Take a minute to think about it. Do you really trust the front office to land top free agents in 2019 or 2020? I'd love to hear who Bulls fans think the Bulls could legitimately have a shot at in 2019 or 2020.
Well, Bulls, some Bulls fans are like talking about getting Kawhi this summer. So there's, you know, there's an example of how rational Bulls fans
are. So to me, LaVine, and if, even if you're going to look back at the Butler trade, LaVine's the third piece in that deal. Now, 1 year later, LaVine is that third piece. Lowry's the most important part of that deal. He stayed here. He's staying here. Chris Dunn was probably the second most important part of that deal. He's staying here. So LaVine, to me, is the third piece in that Butler deal. And another thing, too, the Bulls weren't going to pay Jimmy Butler the supermax. So the Bulls had to deal Butler. So to me, to use the Butler deal as far as, we should keep LaVine, no, let him walk. Like, how could you let him walk and you traded him for an all-star in Butler? Like, look, you got two pieces that are going to be a part of your core in Dunn and Markkanen. LaVine's going to be a big decision, and I think I'm completely with you, Matt, when saying you've got to make the look ahead in the next 2, 3, 4 years and say, where are we going with this team? And I think the funniest part of it all, free agency, the draft, LaVine, the Butler trade year, rebuild year one, I find myself circling back to the theme overall is, I don't know if this team has really a clear, concise, constructed plan. Do you?
No. I don't know if anybody believes that. I think you and I have done our best to look optimistically at the pieces that they have managed to put together thus far. And obviously, Markkanen is the brightest of that optimism. But no, we've expressed skepticism and uncertainty on today's show about whether or not we believe this front office can finally get that big name free agent, the number one free agent on the market that they really want, that they've failed to land time and again, dating all the way back to the summer of 2010 and even before that. I think there's total legitimacy to question where the rebuild goes from here and if it's going to work. Absolutely, it's fair to question that because I'm cautiously optimistic about some of these pieces that they're trying to build with, but I am anything but certain that this rebuild is going to work and that the front office is going to redeem themselves from all of their past mistakes and that Fred Hoiberg is going to prove himself to be a great coach at the NBA level. No, I'm not convinced of any of that.
Man, I just find myself in a spot like we were last year. At least like last year, we knew what the plan was. We changed directions, which they've used a million times in press conferences, and said year one is about rebuilding, looking at our young guys, developing our young talent, trying to get as high of a draft pick as we want in the NBA draft in 2018. Great. That whole year is over now. And now I feel like we don't really have a plan or a direction for year two. What's the direction for year two? Player development again?
Well, I mean, if you ask John Paxson, the plan is to start competing.
With what?
And by competing, I mean being competitive. Well, he said, we don't want to have another one of the seasons like we had in 17-18. They're tough to get through. They're not fun for everybody. Nobody wants to tank. Nobody wants losing seasons. And Paxson, at least in his eyes, the plan now is start to get competitive as we continue the young player development. Now, whether you buy into that or not is up to you. And it's absolutely your right to say, I don't buy that at all. But you and I were talking earlier this week about, man, look how weak the East is now. Got even weaker because you're looking at Cleveland and saying, all right, well, that team's going to turn out to be dog piss, most likely, now that LeBron's gone. I don't know if any of the other tanking teams from this past season with their added lottery picks got significantly better in the offseason, at least thus far. Bulls might actually, if they play well and take a big leap in year two for guys like Dunn and Markkanen and LaVine, assuming he stays around, they could be a 7 or 8 seed next season. I don't see it. I don't see it, but it's totally within the realm of possibility.
I think that all depends on Zach LaVine. I really do. I think the Bulls can be way more competitive with him on the floor and healthy, and I would be way more about it, about them being competitive in 2018 and 2019 if they brought LaVine back. If they don't bring LaVine back, what's the point? I get developing Wendell Carter Jr. and Lauri Markkanen in his second year and Chris Dunn as well and Chandler Hutchison. I get that. But to me, you're back in the lottery again. If you don't bring LaVine back, or if you don't acquire another young asset that you feel can be competitive right away, to me, I just feel like you're back in the lottery again. And maybe it is. Maybe the Bulls are one of those teams that a lot of analysts have been talking about as far as taking a look at the Eastern Conference and going, you know what? LeBron leaving here and a lot of the stars leaving the Eastern Conference is our opportunity to put our foot on the gas and try to become a competitive team again, maybe a little quicker than a lot of these other rebuilding teams thought. And that scares me too. That scares me into the point where if they let LaVine walk and they start signing guys to more overpaid money, like I'm looking at Marcus Smart and Jabari Parker and some of these other guys that I don't want anything to do with, but if the Bulls have $24 million in cap space if they let LaVine walk, that scares me a lot too, because what's left on the market and where are they going from there? So I've got a lot of questions about what the plan is overall for year two and what the plan is in general, because I keep finding myself questioning what the Bulls should do and the moves that they should make and money to spend and money not to spend. And we always keep running it back to 2019, 2020. But at some point, I gotta find out what they're doing here in 2018, 2019. They have a ton of cap space. And the one thing that I really want them to do that they have not done at all, use that cap space to add picks, to add young assets, and they've sat around and done none of that. So we'll see if that happens maybe later on in the summer or early into next season. But right now, I still don't have a clear, concise plan of what the Bulls are doing in 2018, 2019, or for that matter, over the next 2, 3, 4 years.
Yeah, you're not alone. All right, let's talk about Nwaba real quick.
All right.
We've heard some stuff that the Bulls might be open to a sign and trade. We've heard that a lot of teams are interested in Nwaba's services as a guy who played some very, very skilled and spirited defense last season for the Bulls. It's not quite a great 3-and-D guy because he's very hesitant to shoot the three, but decent mid-range game, shot 45% overall from the field last year. Also loved to run and push the pace for Fred, and showed some pretty solid passing skills as well in that transition offense. So we're hearing for all of those reasons that Nwaba is getting interest from a lot of teams. Maybe a sign and trade is an option. Jordan, what do you think the Bulls should do with Nwaba?
Sign and trade for who? The Bulls aren't getting a first round pick for David Nwaba. Like, we can just scratch that completely off.
Yep, exactly.
How much do the Bulls value second round picks? Zero to none. So that to me is the most logical. It's like, okay, you trade David Nwaba for a second round pick and maybe somebody else to match the money. Okay. Bulls hate second round picks though, so that's out the window too. So to me, this would have to be a deal in which he's going to a competitive team, a team that's looking to make the playoffs and looking to free up money with a bad contract or two. So you're going to have to look at a team that wants to acquire David Nwaba and you can get future first round protection on a pick, or maybe a young asset they're willing to pair with a guy that has a huge contract. But I'm looking around the league and thinking to myself, like, okay, if the Bulls are trying to acquire a young asset to go along with Nwaba when they trade him, why not just keep Nwaba? Like, I don't understand that. Is it because he wants too much money? Like, what's too much money for David Nwaba? The Bulls don't want to pay him over $6 million per year? Is that what we're talking about here? And I find myself looking around the league and saying, like, who are the teams interested in him? And what do the Bulls want back in return? Look, the only thing that I feel like his new agent, David Nwaba's new agent, is pitching to people, and Jordan Schultz brought this up too, is he said Nwaba's one of 9 guards in the NBA who averaged 4.4 rebounds per game and shot 45% from the field. Those players are James Harden, Chris Paul, Ben Simmons, Drew Holiday, Bradley Beal, Jaylen Brown, Victor Oladipo, and Jimmy Butler, and then David Nwaba being the 9th. So I don't know, Matt, what do you think? What would the Bulls be looking for in a deal to sign and trade Nwaba?
I think you're right. I agree with you. It's crazy to suggest that the Bulls would be able to get a first round pick for Nwaba in a sign and trade. I don't think that's very likely.
I would be shocked.
I would be shocked. I know that the Bulls really do like Nwaba, and he is an example of this front office actually being able to recognize talent, because Nwaba got waived and the Bulls said, no, yeah, we see potential with that guy. And now all of a sudden, at least if the reports are true, lots of teams, after seeing Nwaba play one season with the Bulls, see that potential that the Bulls saw a year ago. As far as what I think might be a fair deal for him and the Bulls to come to if they do really want to keep him around, I say you look at the worst contract the Bulls have right now on their books, and that's Felicio's. And he got an extension of 4 years and $32 million, so you're getting $8 million per year on average. To me, something like that for Nwaba is reasonable. I think you might even be able to get him for less than that. If he wants to sign a four-year deal, you could get him on maybe an average of $5.5, $6, maybe $7 million per season. If the Bulls were able to strike that deal with Nwaba, I think that's a win for them because he is a very good young piece to build with right now, but it makes the Felicio deal look even worse in comparison.
I've got one scenario for you, Matt, one trade scenario, and I think you're going to get really mad at me, but I'm going to bring it up anyway.
Okay, cool.
The team that just broke the highest team payroll in NBA history was the Oklahoma City Thunder. $300 million. They're paying $150 million in tax right now for this team that they've assembled. Maybe we look at Oklahoma City and say, you know what? You don't like Carmelo Anthony's Carmelo Anthony's salary. Fine. We'll take Carmelo off your hands. You got to give us something else, maybe a first-round pick, multiple first-round picks. You take Felicio from us. You can have Nwaba as well. And figure out something to do there. And then the Bulls bring in Carmelo, find a way to buy Carmelo out. And then you just added a potential first round pick, potential two first round picks. It depends on how badly they want to give up Carmelo. And I would assume that they want to give him up as soon as possible if anybody has any interest in him. Look, he's on 1 year, 1 year left. And even if you didn't buy him out, gaining those multiple first-round draft picks or whatever young asset you get from the Oklahoma City Thunder in return would be all enough for me to say, fine, I can deal with Carmelo being here for 5-6 months or at least having to pay and buy him out. Now, is that a realistic opportunity? Probably not, but that's one team that I would look at and say contract dump is almost immediate for them, but matching salaries would be hard to do. You would have to throw Cristiano Felicio in there. You'd have to throw like Omer Asik in there just to get it up enough to be able to match contracts.
Oh, I don't even like contemplating the Bulls taking on Mel. I mean, obviously, yeah, they would try to have some kind of buyout situation there. Melo's so washed. I think Melo just needs to retire at this point. Like, obviously, he opted in because it's another near $30 million that he can make, even if everybody in Oklahoma City is saying, you are washed, you are trash, I can't believe we're paying you this year, and he just has to listen to that. Whatever. Melo don't care. In this hypothetical, though, it should be worth noting that the Thunder are already sending out their 2020 first-round pick to Orlando. It's got protections on it. I think it's protected 1 through 20. So, and then there are, you know, further protections the farther they go by year. And but that's it as far as picks that they currently have outgoing. So they have their own in 2019. Maybe the Bulls could get a little bit of revenge on remind me again why we also gave them a second round draft pick to send them Doug, Taj, and we got Cam. Like, remind me again why that happened.
I can't give you a good option. Look, if it means that the Thunder would take on Omer Asik and take on Cristiano Felicio, look, when they take on Omer Asik, they could stretch that contract out. And they could make that over 5 years, so they would still have some flexibility. To me, I would think I would ask back if I'm the Bulls for your 2019 unprotected first-round pick, and I would probably ask for a guy like Terrence Ferguson. Remember Terrence Ferguson when we were talking about the 16th pick last summer?
Mm-hmm.
Young guard, 6'7", 185 pounds. He played overseas in Australia for 1 year, decided not to go to Arizona. I think that would be a guy I would ask for. I'd ask for Terrence Ferguson. I'd ask for a first-round pick, and then fine, I'll take Melo on for a year, and we'll try to figure out a buyout with him. That, to me, would be the only scenario in which I would be like, you know what, as ugly as Melo's game is and as bad as he might be for the Bulls, and if they have to buy him out for a big chunk of money, at least you're getting rid of Felicio, at least you're getting rid of Sheik, and at least it's only 1 year, and so your cap is still flexible in 2019 or 2020.
Yeah, that's a good point. It would just be hilarious to see what kind of reactions we would get from all across Bulls Nation if the Bulls brought in a washed Melo, because it would be so similar to what finally the Bulls front office getting the guy that they coveted for so many years. They finally got D Wade. We got one season out of him and he was washed as all hell. And Melo, some Bulls fans already forget, we went after him pretty hard in the summer of whatever that was, 2014, right. And then got Powell instead because Melo chickened out at the last second and went back to the Knicks. This would just be like the next banana boat crew up of, all right, well, we finally got Wade. Now that he's super washed. All right, well, hey, we finally got Melo on this one-year disgusting deal, and he's super washed.
Oh, man. So I'm excited to see what Bulls fans say about that. So if you want to react to maybe what teams David Nwaba is ultimately going to go to if he ends up back with the Bulls, it's still up in the air. Seems like Nwaba and the Bulls are at a stalemate, same with LaVine and the Bulls, so kind of a common theme going into free agency with the two guys that thought were the most important for the Bulls. But we'll see. If you can think of any other teams that you think could possibly make a deal for David Nwaba, we'd love to hear it. That was one of the few teams that I could think of that the Bulls would be advantageous for them. We'll see. Ultimately, I'd like to see David Nwaba back. I don't know about you, Matt, but on a multi-year deal, David Nwaba is still super young. I like the way that they developed him in this year, kind of took a chance on him, and he developed into way better of a player than I think we all initially thought. I'd love to see him come back, even if it does cost the Bulls 2 or 3 years at $5, $6 million per year. I still think he's a valuable and a young player. Look, he's still under 25 years old too, so, and that's ultimately what's important for me is gaining assets that are under 26 years old.
Yeah, if the Bulls do end up coming to terms with Nwaba to keep him around, if he can develop a consistent three-point shot, or at least close to a consistent three-point shot, if he proves to be enough of a threat that the Bulls opponents actually have to guard him at the perimeter, he can turn into a very good two-way player in this league.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. You can follow us on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls on Twitter. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShibles, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Our text and voicemail line is at 331-979-1369. Want to hear all of your text messages, all your questions, your reaction, anything we've talked about on the show this week. Hit us up at 331-979-1369. We do mailbag every Wednesday, so make sure you get your voicemails and text messages in there for Wednesday's show. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back on Monday with a fresh episode. For Matt and Jordan, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com